Welcome everyone to the OA San Fernando Valley Fall in Love with the 12 Steps workshop. My name is Jackie. I'm a compulsive overeater and your moderator for today's workshop. We are going to start with the 12 steps and they will be shared on the screen. Thank you, Jules, for reading them.
Thank you for having me, Jules, anorexic overeater, overexerciser. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God and to ourselves and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God, thank you, remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to them all. Nine, recommends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and for the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And I
Great. We are going to have the first speaker, Lindsay, go ahead and share for 20 minutes, and then we will read the traditions after her share. Thank you, Lindsay.
Thanks, Jackie. Hi, everyone. My name's Lindsay, and I am a compulsive overeater, and I live in Houston, Texas. It's really good to be here, and I love the topic. And I've known about the workshop for a little while, and wasn't really sure how I was going to be inspired to speak on this topic, right? Because it can go several different ways. But I've just been praying about it and asking God, and we'll see what comes up. But I'll show my pictures here in a second. But what I wanted to share is that this morning in my meditation, which is like truly my favorite time of day, there's this meditation teacher that I really love, and what he suggests to ask is just like, who am I? And just like, sometimes answers come, sometimes answers don't, just kind of asking that to God, higher power, the universe. And what I got this morning that felt like the most like pure answer was just like a channel of love. Like I am love, I came from love, and I am just like a channel of love. Now, I wish I could say that all day long I've lived into that. Actually, today's been a rough day for me. I've had a hard day. Some of those days when you just want to lay in bed and pull the covers over your face and close the blinds, and like I actually did that today. I actually did for a few hours, but I'm here, and because this is what I do now. I show up. Even if I don't want to, and even if I'm having a bad day. And it's really important for me to be honest about that because recovery is all the things, right? Like it's all the like beautiful, amazing emotions and feelings. And it's also like the hard and the sad and the afraid. And so feeling all of those things happens. And I was once told, if you want to be comfortable, like don't be in recovery. But the message of hope is that, like, I'm here. Like, I suited up. I put on my makeup. Like, I'm down here. I got dressed. I ate two abstinent meals today. I'm going to eat an abstinent dinner. And, like, I'm showing up. because life isn't always easy, but no matter what happens in life, like the food doesn't change. And that is only a result of a higher power and pursuing a spiritual way of life and like genuinely falling in love with the 12 steps, like genuinely loving this way of life, even when it hurts. But I'm so grateful for it, you know? And like, this is it in action. Like, you're seeing my 12 step, like my love and being in love with the 12 steps in action because I'm here, even though I would rather still be in bed with the blinds drawn. Except not really, right? Because I don't really want to be like that. But anyway, I just wanted to share that reality with you all. Here's my pictures, just so you see where I come from. So in this disease, it manifests for me as morbid obesity, as you can see. So I am 5'3", and this disease, I got up to 350 pounds. So just here are some of the pictures of me before. You know, I was still out there trying to live life, but it got increasingly very, very challenging. And then here are some pictures, you know, as I was losing the weight. Oh man, this is a picture on the left. I'm at Disney World with my niece and nephews, who are like my loves, and I got to walk all around and ride all the roller coasters, which was so cool because like I didn't have to think twice about fitting in any ride. And then I took my nephews and my dad to a Texans game. I'm a huge sports fan. And then here are just some side by sides, you know, that show like, here's like an amazing experience, World Series, like first baseline tickets. And I just wanted to die. I wanted to escape. I wanted out. I was sick of taking so much space. And then here's another picture of me at an Angels game with OA peeps. And like, it was a completely different experience, you know? And again, so those are just some of the, this is the evidence of my physical transformation. And the thing is, you know, like it says in the big book, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. And I always like to be really clear about that when I share my photos, because this is not and was never about weight loss. And I know that sounds like super cheesy and cliche, but like it really, really wasn't. And it really, really isn't. I mean, I really just showed up every day and did what I was told and worked the steps and took the actions. And that's what I'm still doing today. And somehow 200 pounds has come off and stayed off. And I stay sober with the food, you know, even on days like today where I've been having a hard time. And so I've had this conversation with a few people of like, okay, if we could be normal, would we? Like, you know, if I could show up and like not have an addiction and not have to live this 12-step way of life, would I? And, you know, I've thought about that a lot. And again, like, you know, you might not believe me, but the truth is, like, what I get from working this program, working the 12 steps, pursuing spiritual principles and getting a relationship with a power greater than me, like I wouldn't trade it. I actually wouldn't want to be a normie anymore because I think I get a really beautiful, rich, full living experience. Like I said before, you know, I remember when I was in the food and I would see people crying, you know, like really sad about something and experiencing their feelings. And I remember I would feel jealous because I was like, man, I can't really do that. I can't let myself feel feelings for very long. I think that will kill me. And I just eat first, you know, so I don't have to feel the feelings. And so now, I don't know, it's really beautiful. I really love this way of life. I have a life that's beyond my wildest dreams, so far beyond the, you know, the weight loss that you saw in those photos. And you know, what I love to do is spend the rest of the time just talking about what you know, what's my current experience working this 12 steps in my daily life? Because I thought about maybe, you know, saying, okay, step one, two, and kind of just going through all of them. And then I thought, you know what? There's an AA speaker I really love. And he's always just like, here's my current experience. Like every time he goes and speaks somewhere, he's just like, here's what's going on right now. And so, yeah, I'm gonna share with you all just sort of different ways that I live the 12 steps in my daily life. And, you know, I guess let's talk about step one quickly. I mean, I had a decades long step one experience, you know, like really seeing how powerless I was over food. And I remember thinking like, I am 300 pounds and I want to die. And people would say, well, I think you just need to eat some more. It doesn't seem like you're done. And I remember just feeling so like angry and hopeless and desperate and almost sort of like betrayed of like, what do you mean? You're not going to help me. But the truth was like, I did. I had to keep eating every single bite until not even until the pain became so great. It wasn't even about that because it was nothing I did. It wasn't like a level of pain that became so great that I had to surrender. It truly was like an act of God, an act of grace that gave me the willingness just for one day, for one meal, to follow my food plan and then to reach out when I wanted to eat and then to show up to that meeting and then to make an outreach call. Like, every little thing, right? And so now in my step one experience, I experience powerlessness around my defects and around life and around people and places and things. And it's not until those the unmanageability becomes so painful, just like it did with the food. And I surrender, and then it's the same thing. Like, it's an act of grace that starts to like turn the volume down on those things. But, you know, right now, so something I've struggled with a lot in recovery is like, you know, the people pleasing and not speaking up. You know, I just want everyone to like me, and I want to manage and control exactly what you think of me. And I, in my job, I just got this promotion, and it's pretty exciting. You know, I'm running two teams at my company, and we've just hired someone that has more experience than I have. And, you know, we used to be peers, and I'm terrified. Like, I'm terrified of, it's like when I conduct a meeting, I literally feel like I'm that girl in junior high who the boy I had a crush on unzipped my backpack in the hallway and my lunch fell out. Like, when I am conducting those meetings, like, I really feel like naked, vulnerable, and exposed, and I'm terrified of what people are thinking of me. And so what do I do with that? Like, my only choice now, I mean, I have two choices, actually, it tells me in the big book. I can either go on to the bitter end and I can blot out the consciousness of this intolerable situation. I could go to the food and say, this is too much. I'm so scared. I feel inadequate. I don't think I can do this. So I'm just going to go eat because it's going to make it feel better. And it will. It'll work. It will make it feel better. Now, again, how long will it make it feel better? Then when will I want to kill myself? Then how quickly will I get to 350, 400, 500 pounds? Of course. But we don't think about that. I have no effective mental defense against the first bite. So when I'm scared at work and I don't go to God, I'm going to go to the food. There's no middle ground. You saw my pictures. I'm a heroin level addict with the food here, man. Like, I'm under a bridge. And so I have to work the steps. So I am, you know, I'm in my meditation chair in the mornings, and I'm writing and I'm doing inventories on this, and I'm on my knees asking God for help. You know, I am talking to I'm talking to fellows. I am talking to my sponsor. You know, I'm getting experience, strength, and hope from people. But really, like, it's like that step six and seven of like sort of that same level of like powerlessness over this defect and begging God for help. And then, like, I show up anyway. I have this, I made this sign that's like right by my desk, and it's like, God, you know, show me how I can fit myself to be of maximum service to, and I've listed like every single member of my team and then the co-founders of my company. And like, God, can you just help me today to like be of service to these people. And some days it looks better than others. Some days, like I'm really afraid to take a risk. Like tomorrow morning, my plan is that I want to open our 9 a.m. Monday morning meeting and have everyone share a gratitude. It's worked on Teams before and I love it, but I'm terrified. I'm so scared that people aren't going to take me seriously, that they're going to think I'm a Pollyanna, but I'm going to do it anyway. Like I'm going to show up scared. And that's practicing these principles in all my affairs. You know, that's the morning, the nightly review and the morning prayer and meditation and taking these things into that and working the steps. And you might think, what is like managing someone with more experience than you have to do with the food? But you see, everything leads back to the food, everything. Either I pursue God or I go to the food. Another thing that's been really big for me lately is the line in the big book, in Bill's story, faith has to work in and through us 24 hours a day or we perish. And when I read through that with a sponsee, I was like, ooh, man, it just really stuck out. And I've just been, you know, meditating a lot on that. What does that look like? Like, what does it look like for faith to work in and through me in this situation? You know, I have a very close family member that's dying of this disease. Like I'm actually like watching him die. And that is heartbreaking. And I don't understand why. And I ask God, please, God, can you rescue him like you rescued me? Why won't you help him? And faith in that situation just looks like total reliance and confidence on something other than myself. And I was at a meeting last week where someone just said, like, may your will be my only goal. Can you just align my will and what I want with reality? I welcome it and I say thank you. And that's really challenging, you know? And then there's in step two in the AA 12 and 12, it's on page 31 and it talks about how defiance is an outstanding characteristic of many alcoholics. And, you know, talks about like oftentimes God has not delivered us the good things of life which we specified. And specifically it says, you know, we prayed for healthy children and were presented with sick ones or none at all. We prayed for promotions at business and none came. Loved ones whom we heartily depended on were taken by so-called acts of God. And, you know, at no time was I asking what God's will is for me. I just been telling him what it ought to be. And it says, you know, that in AA, we see people meet and transcend their other pains and trials because this is not only faith, but it's a faith that works under all conditions. And, you know, I've experienced a lot of really painful things, you know, I mean, especially that line where it says we prayed for healthy children and were presented with sick ones or none at all. And, you know, I'm at a point in my life where I'm having to reconcile that the none at all might be true for me. And guess what? Like, you know, I have to say, God, whatever your will is, please help me align my will with yours. I welcome it. And I say thank you. And I'm just here for whatever happens, you know, because the truth is I don't know what's best. I don't know what's happening in the spiritual realm. All I can see is what's in front of me. And if I'm just living there and trusting what my eyes can see, that makes me crazy. So faith on this, in this power greater than me, right? And living in that step two, God, thank you that you can restore me to sanity. And then step three is that I just say, all right, God, here it is. Like Ori said at a retreat we went to, it's like, I offer myself. It's like this pen, like here, I am offering you myself, like my will, my life, what I think, what I do, what happens. Like it's none of my business. And that is so, that's like next level faith, you know, but like, again, It's again, like the food doesn't change, right? So like I don't do all of this perfectly, but I've walked through the pain and the sadness and the anger and the whatever, and the food doesn't change because I go to God. And sometimes going to God looks like calling my sponsor, you know? Sometimes going to God looks like getting on a meeting. You know, and how else do I work the 12 steps, you know? And I told you, I mean, my morning prayer and meditation time, it really is like the bright spot of my day. And if someone had said that, like, I love waking up at 5 a.m. to sit in my room and pray and meditate and write, I'd be like, that is complete horseshit. And like, I don't believe you. But it really is like, I love it. I enjoy it. It gives me, yeah, like I don't know what God is. I was listening to a meeting yesterday and they asked the speaker like, "How has your relationship with God evolved?" And I was like, "Oh my God, I hope no one asks me that tomorrow because I actually feel like I know less about God now." Like, and that's my truth. Like I don't know, but what I do know is there's like an unaccounted for experience that I'm having. Like there's no other explanation for this recovery, for somebody that couldn't even get a half of a day out of the food. And then I'll spend the last less than a minute talking about step 12, which like sponsoring. Okay, I know someone in this meeting says every time a sponsees call, he's like, "Oh, I wish they weren't calling." And me too, you know, I give them a 5 minute grace period. And sometimes I'm like, "Oh, maybe they're gonna miss the 5 minutes and I get my 30 minutes back, you know?" But like every time I talk to a sponsee, like I'm energized. I'm out of myself for 30 minutes. I get a reprieve from what's going on here for 30 minutes. And I sponsor at a high level. If there's anything that I've done consistently over the last almost 4 years, it's sponsoring. And like it really is the bright spot of my life. And that 20 minutes went by really fast. But wait,
You
is it
have eight more, or that was 10,
what? No
right?
way. I think that was 20. Was it 20, Eileen?
Oh, okay.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Yeah,
Thank you so much, Lizzie. We're going to post the 12 traditions and have Shelley read them. And Janet will be posting a link for our seventh tradition to contribute. If you can, hold on. Multitasking is not my greatest skill.
Hi, Shelley K., compulsive overeater. Thank you for letting me read the 12 Traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is one, but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself to our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting the other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary source to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Thank you. Seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Overeaters Anonymous should refrain forever. Remain not forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, film, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you, Shelley. And we will have our second speaker, Ore.
My name is Ore. I'm a compulsive overeater. And yeah, how am I supposed to follow that one up? When we were talking about the share this morning, you know, yeah, that was a great talk. That was a great one. I've been in program for this time around. I think this is going on year 9. I'm down from my top weight of 485 pounds. I'm down about 220, 225 from my top weight. So, I'm really into ChatGPT right now, and you know, and just getting some inspiration for this talk, I just started to throw some things in ChatGPT. So for the sake of this share and the context of this meeting, we're just gonna say the acronym GPT stands for God Power Technology, because it really did, like, it did a great job. And you know, one of the things it suggests, it says you can structure your 20-minute share around these three themes. Number one, the surrender to love, steps 1 through 3. 2, love in action, steps 4 through 9. And 3, the promise of love, steps 10 through 12. I've never heard that. Like, I don't know where it pulled that from, but that is genius. Like, I think I'm going to work a little bit backwards, like the promise of love. Like, I've never heard that in steps 10 through 12. And like, it could be said that the whole principle behind the steps is brotherly love, or love, the principle of love. And each one of these spiritual actions, each one of these spiritual principles gets me closer to love. And, you know, sometimes I think maybe God is just the purest form of love. And love isn't always, it's not like unicorns and rainbows and skipping through daisies. It's like, love is strength. Love is commitment. Love is devotion. Love is support. Love is understanding. Love is compassion. You know, love is strong. Love is strong. Love is bigger than, you know, my emotions. And that's what this program is. This program is a lot of that for me. And, you know, part of my spiritual malady is, and I don't know where it happened. I don't know where it happened, but I was disconnected from love, or I was separated from love early. Like, my experience of love, I have an abnormal reaction to love. I don't embrace it easily, and I haven't for, like, I don't, you know, I still have artifacts within me, like, that Like, I resist love. I avoid love. Love translates to me and like I'm not safe. Like, I can't trust it. And that's one way that being 485 pounds served me, is that it just kept love at bay. And I didn't have to worry about love disappointing me, love hurting me, And having that physical barrier between me and the world, and food, and food being my absolute everything, and being at the center of my life, it was consistently there. It was what love wasn't, seemingly. And a lot of my work in the steps, it really has been about learning how to let love in and transmit love. I joined this men's group. I've been with this men's group of mine for my whole recovery, so almost about 9 years. And I've seen, these men have seen me grow. In, like, they've seen every iteration of my growth. They've experienced every movement, big transition, ups, downs. They've been witness to my experience. And that it is the embodiment of brotherly love. It's literally brotherly love. I learned how to become a man of integrity. I learned how to be a man of love in that men's group. And I've never shown up to anything as consistently as I have with that men's group. And we talk life, we talk steps, we talk about how we navigate this world soberly with food. Those men have bled on me, I've bled on them. And it started with, and with love, they supported me while I stopped killing myself with food. So I didn't really start a relationship with myself or God in this world until I stopped killing myself with the food. That's when I really learned what the path of love was. I'm not one of those that could say, oh, I love myself and still be 480 pounds. That's a superpower. Like, I'm not that. Like, I absolutely hated myself. And then, I thought that when I put down the food, that that was going to solve the issue. But then that was just the entry ticket. Then I discovered, oh, this self-loathing, this hate for myself is deeper than the food or the weight. That intense self-loathing and belief that I'm not good enough, it was the barrier to allowing love in. And doing this step work, it's been chiseling at the, it just like a hammering at that, knocking chunks off that with every spiritual action that I take. The idea of surrendering to love, one, two, and three, for today, powerlessness doesn't show up in the food necessarily. I'm like, oh, I'm powerless over the food, but that's not the, I've been neutralized on that. Where the powerlessness shows up with is that deep inadequacy and that deep sense of not being good enough or feeling like I'm terminally unique and permanently broken. You know, that's where the powerlessness comes up today. And two, coming to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. You know, what I've learned in my, what I've learned here is I've grown suspect of my beliefs. Like, that's like, you know, my most passionate beliefs now, there's always a part of me that's like, I'm suspect of that. Let me run that by someone. Because sometimes I could be full flight from reality. And sometimes my thinking may be hijacked. So coming to believe that a power can restore me to sanity is part of that. Like, you know what? Let me check this idea in with others, and let me get a different perspective on this. Because maybe my thinking needs to be restored to sanity. And it, you know, and maybe this belief that I have about me, about the world, about you, maybe all that needs to be brought into the light for a re-examination. That's what restoral sanity looks like to me. In three, right? Turning my will and my life over to care of God. What does the care of God look like? What is that? What is the experience of the care of God? Well, I know I'm absolutely convinced that my managing skills, my ability to care for myself, I utterly failed at. So that's, you know, when I hear like self-care and things like that, I'm a critical bastard, but you know, like, some of my response sometimes is like, what the f are we talking about? Self-care? My self-care, my version of self-care was a whole pizza, brownies, 2 liter Coke, plus wings, like, and cheesy breads. Like, that was self-care. That was my idea of self-care. And then I came in contact with these ideas, these men that have nurtured me and have watched me mature as a result of, you know, being disciplined by spiritual principles. Like, they've seen, you know, and through all this process of, you know, talking it out, praying, doing the writing, doing the meditation, going to meetings and sharing about it, sharing with my sponsor, being open to direction, through all that, you know, then I learned, oh, well, maybe God's care looks different. Like, God's care is for me to have a weighed and measured food plan. God's care is providing me this way of life where I actually have a way out. Right? God's care shows up in ways that I may not necessarily see with my physical eyes. It could be a shift in my perspective. It could be an overwhelming and profound movement within my character, or it could be something minute, like showing up at work and smiling and saying hey to someone, saying hey to someone, or not going into my, you know, th just this is the this theme of like God's care versus my care. And I don't know why the formula works out like this, but self-will, when I'm in self-will, it does avail me something. It usually avails me more pain. It usually avails me more conflict. I don't know why that works out. Even my best intentions blow up in my face. And for some reason, self-will is always driven by this. It's driven by fear, and it's this need to control and manage and make things more palatable to my sensitivities. And then God's care is just like, when I'm in faith, when I'm in love, you know, the moments that I do get a reprieve for myself, I get a moment where it's just like, oh, the world can be what it needs to be, and I can be content within my own skin. Or, you know, the world can be what it needs to be, and I can be bothered and I can be afraid, and that doesn't have to spill out into the world. I can continue to show up. I can continue to seek and know that and have faith that on the, I'll make it to the other end of this and probably be stronger for the experience. Let's go back to ChatGPT. It has some other great ideas here. We cease fighting anyone or anything, page 103. And it says, love through peace. Allowing someone to have their ideas. That's loving. Allowing someone to have the autonomy of making their own decisions is loving. That's peace. Allowing someone to be wrong, knowing they're wrong, and not fighting that. That's love. Right? This idea of harm, like harm, being a harmonious character. I'm not a harmonious character when I'm in self-will. When I'm thinking about my needs and what needs to be met to make me feel more comfortable in my in life. This is like when I'm reaching to take whatever I can to make me feel better, it has an impact on everyone else. And the more that I take for me, the more I can't see the impact that it has on everyone else and the disharmony that I create. And in step nine, that's where I learn reparations. That's where I learn the reparative work, of creating to the best of my ability harmonious connections with others. And in that process, somehow I gain a better relationship with myself in that as a byproduct. These steps are like revolutionary, right? Like they're it's just like there's nothing on earth that like who would think the path to freedom would be these spiritual actions. And I'm so grateful that God has saw fit for me to have this experience, because I've seen men and women desperately want this way of life, and they can't stop. And they can't, for lack of a better word or lack of a better way of saying it, get it. And they continue to refuse to see this way of life. Right now, my phone is getting blown up by men's group guys right now. Like two calls just came in within 5 minutes. That's love. That's love. Reaching out to me right now. I'm still learning. And Lindsay alluded to, knowing less about God. Like I know less about love. I don't know. There's still a lot of room to grow. A lot of room to grow. And I am convinced there is no graduation. There are spaces in me that love still needs to heal. There are spaces, I don't even know there are spaces. I truly believe that this is a spiritual way of life. And I truly believe that God has a bigger plan for me than I can envision for myself. And I have to show up for this experience. And that's, I think that's what I'm in love with is like this experience. And in the 9 years, it's gone. My life has gone in spaces that I did not anticipate. And no matter what, I show up. I showed up for it. And I was talking to my sponsor just recently. He was like, he said, yeah, look, this is who you are. You get scared, you get terrified, and you show the fuck up anyway. Like, this is the type of man that I wanted to be. It's like I'm resilient because of the spiritual way of life. I'm not going to shrink from it. I've been walked and guided through so much where it's just like, you know what? This too shall pass. I'll make it on the other side. And I'll probably be the better for it. That's what practicing these principles in all my affairs on a daily basis. That's what all the meditation and the writing that helps me with. That's what all the prayer helps me with. That's what all the calls and the sponsorship and, doing the, putting away chairs or serving at the birthday party. That's what all of it's for. And so I can continue to show up for this experience and allow that love to work through me. So thank you for letting me talk. I hope that was of some help.
Thank you so much. That went fast for both of you. I really appreciate you guys both sharing. We have time now for question and answers, and then after that section, we'll open it up for regular sharing. If anyone has any questions for either of the speakers, you can.